Welcome to episode 56 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and I'm here again today with my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
Sup, peoples?
And you might remember this guy from our last episode. We've brought him back, Mr. Connor Casey.
What's up?
And we have these guys back because last episode we did a preview of WWE SummerSlam event, and after quite a hectic weekend and even Monday Night Raw, we have a lot to talk about on that front. So Connor and Matt are back to do their SummerSlam wrap-up at the end of the show and talk about what's happened to WWE since then. But we got more going on than that this week. We have a bunch of new comics to talk about. It's about New Comics Day today, and by the time you hear this, and so we have some comics to talk about, including our latest breakdown of Jonathan Hickman's X-Men Reinvention, Powers of Ten, number two is out, and so we have a lot to talk about there. Also, but first, before we get to all of that, in our news flash, we're going to be looking at a Mexican restaurant's crazy Avengers Endgame bootleg ad. We are going to be talking about the fate of New Mutants. We will also be talking about what we're hearing coming down the pipeline for the next Aladdin live-action movie from Disney. And we are going to be talking about some new things that have popped up on the Marvel TV front. So be sure to stay tuned for all of that when we come back for our news flash.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, so let's start right at the top. So there was this Mexican restaurant that decided to get entrepreneurial and create an ad they thought would get a lot of people's eyeballs.
It worked.
Yeah.
It did.
In terms of advertising and reach, like, yeah, this worked out beautifully. Because restaurant Algo Delicioso basically took the climactic moment of Avengers Endgame, the snap-off between Thanos and Tony Stark, and twisted it around to the point where, like, they showed the scene, this bootleg, horribly rendered scene of Thanos trying to snap the gauntlet and failing, and then them cutting to Tony Stark, Iron Man, and instead of him, it cuts to the restaurant over, holding a plate of tacos and saying, basically, like, I am Algo Delicioso, and then snapping. And
then it gets
already
better.
Yeah, wait, whoa, you guys gotta learn how to sell some sizzle around here. You're like become the new gym over here. So the thing is, like, yeah, you get that part and you're like, man, this is crazy.
So good.
But it doesn't end there. It does not end there. Then it turns into a home video tour of this restaurant, and there are little gif Thanos, like little Thanos gifs in the bottom of each corner doing a dance, and you're like, okay, well, this got more crazy. It doesn't end there. Because as soon as you start watching this and you're just settled into this, like, this is a real thing I'm seeing. You know, the little gif Thanos just drops it down like it's hot, spins it around, and just starts twerking his ass in your face. And, yeah, this goes on. Well, so you're at once looking at, like, various hot Mexican dishes being paired in this home video of a restaurant while Thanos shakes his ass in your face, and apparently this makes you want to eat at this place, which is true. I mean,
I want to go there.
Yeah, I now got to go there just to see this guy who's in the video, right?
Eat like, that, Las Palmas.
Yeah, like, I don't know, but this thing is going viral, and it is crazy, so check it out if you have not. But, you know, I thought we had gotten to, like, peak Avengers Endgame, like, zeitgeist impact, but apparently, I mean, Marvel's just getting so big that now commercials are making bootleg commercials off its movies.
Props to whoever at that restaurant came up with that. Here's what we should do.
This. Yeah, I feel like it was like their grandson or something.
Yeah.
It was like, Poppy, I got something for you. Like, here's how we're going to do it. And like, that kid, I mean, if he doesn't get a bunch of lawsuits from Marvel Studios, whoever came up with this, they should get a job interview for, you know, in advertising.
If you sue him for this, you're just mean.
Just high-end advertising.
This is gold.
I mean, you should get a free meal at Delicioso, free like Marvel company party meal.
You can see where all the budget went though, because there's this well rendered Thanos moving around, and then there's this very like grainy bootleg version of the Yo Soy whatever, and then snap.
Hey, it's man, like, they priorities. They knew they had to get Thanos right.
You need to get Thanos. A thick Thanos doing twerking it is where the budget goes, apparently.
Thick with two C's.
Yeah, so, okay. So check that out. We have that up on comicbook.com on our Marvel page. That was just a crazy little tidbit for you guys. All right, back to actual news. It's being reported that, we're still kind of, we've been reporting and going through, there's been some news coming out about where the whole Fox-Disney merger stands and, like, where the various discussions are for some of the kind of murkier aspects of that acquisition. Like, we came and we talked last time about Deadpool and the conversations of whether Deadpool is going to be PG-13 or R, and those internal discussions have been confirmed to be happening. Well, we got an update on another little dangling thread from Fox's X-Men franchise, which, of course, is New Mutants. Now, New Mutants was supposed to come out.
Poor New Mutants.
Poor New Mutants. Well, again, you selling the steak before the sizzle, because I was teasing like we were going to say what happened. But since Jim Viscardi just spoiled it all, yes, poor New Mutants. Disney is not impressed with New Mutants, apparently. Here's the actual quote that I will read for you, because I did some time and I looked it up. And the studio is unimpressed with New Mutants, an X-Men spinoff, and believes it has limited box office potential. That is what Variety has reported. So that, again, it doesn't sound good. We've been debating New Mutants for months on end about, like, what to do with this. Is it getting a theatrical release? There's been all kinds of conflicting things, because at some trade shows, they were starting to put out, like, New Mutants, promotional material. We thought it might even be coming at the end of summer or something, but now it just sounds like Disney doesn't like it either, and it's just, I mean, this movie's a mess. Like, it's been reshot, like, oh, God. Like, Josh Booth, the director, had it all put together. Then Fox was like, we want to make it more horror. Then they did a bunch of reshoots. We lost track of whatever the hell was happening with it, and now it just sounds like it's in limbo, development limbo for all time. This brings me back to a real simple point. People, elements in this office, unseemly elements, have been debating that, no, let's finish Fox's X-Men universe. You can go look on comicbook.com a year ago when I said Fox should just end its X-Men universe now, put out what they have on, like, streaming services, whatever, just for posterity, and just end it. No, there's still a profit to be made, blah, 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 blah. That's what you hear around here. But here we are now. Dark Phoenix came out, and it tanked.
Yeah.
It tanked hard. So great money spent there. And now New Mutants, for all the production costs, sounds like it's just in limbo. So great money spent there. Guess what we could have done like a year ago? We could have all had a weekend talking about both these films if they had just dropped on some kind of on Hulu as, like, big features, and we would have all been a little bit more jazzed. So I don't know, man. There's still a hope. There's still Hulu, because Disney owns that, and they can put it out.
I mean, they should release it. Yeah, you have enough
put it out
entities to put this out on. Let whoever's going to watch this, let them watch it. Here's the thing. And then be done. Move on.
Like, try with it. It's a perfect vehicle to do what Netflix, test the water. Seeing how much draw you can get for, like, a feature film release as an event thing. Like Bright.
And do a surprise drop with it. Screw it.
Just surprise drop it. Put it on Hulu. Say,
wouldn't that be a cool New York Comic Con
exactly.
thing?
And how much interest would you be putting into Hulu right before, like, Disney Plus? Like, yeah, New York Comic Con this fall. Just put it out there and be like, end a panel, be like, oh, and in case you guys were ever caring about New Mutants, it's on Hulu now.
And people later. Will go watch that, and exactly. It would be the talk of the con.
Yeah.
Well, it's a horror Hulu movie. Put it out of Halloween.
Yeah, you could do that too.
Boom. Like, we just solved New Mutants' problems. So,
but I mean, I do want it's done right. I do want, I mean, I could care less about this movie. I've been adamant about that.
Yes,
I'm
have.
Fine with it. So, but I do understand why people, like, want to see this, right? So release it. Don't do that thing where you just shelve it indefinitely and never release it.
I mean, it's
it.
A movie.
It's, done.
It's a horror superhero movie that has a cast of, like, really. Now these people have actually come up and have good careers and off to other things, but...
Because it's been so long.
Yeah, it's been so long, but at the time they were young up-and-comers, but now they're established stars. You recognize them from, Stranger Things or Game of Thrones or, whatchamacallit, what's the split sequel that just came out?
Glass,
yeah. Anya Taylor-Joy. Like,
that was her.
Yeah, so who plays Magic. And so, like, yeah, just put this thing out, man.
Do you think Dark Phoenix bombing just kind of gave them the sign to be like, we shouldn't even try with this?
Well, New Mutants is a different kind of beast. New Mutants is like an indie compared to a blockbuster.
But it's been a movie that's been in trouble since day one. Like, it's gone through extensive reshoots. I don't even think, like, Josh Boone had a falling out with execs at Fox. Like, he doesn't want to come back for it. No one wants to really do the reshoots. It's so tainted at this point that, like, why would you want to put something out that, like, it's kind of like the Snyder Cut.
But no. I'm not letting this take place. Like, no, it's very different. They didn't have a bad movie. They had an okay movie that Fox got big eyes on and said, oh, if we pump this up with more horror, it could probably sell even more. And that's what started us down this rabbit hole. It was the greed factor. Like, they just wanted to kind of change and pump it in and play the demographics in the market and make a better, bigger sell of a movie. Then they just completely fell flat on their face with that. So the original cut that, you know, Josh Boone put together is there, and it tested fairly well. It was just that people would have liked more horror in it, like, was the note. So, like, you have a competent movie already. It's not a troubled movie. They screwed it up by keep trying to mess with it and tweak it, which any creative person could tell you, you overdo that, it just eventually all falls apart.
Which is true, but the perception now, the overall perception of it is that it's tainted, I feel like.
Yeah, but if you, that's the whole thing. You don't do an extensive promotion. Just put it out.
Oh, I agree. I think you should still
let
release
people
it.
Come to it, and because it's not like an incomplete movie.
Just the thing though, like, if this was, but if, like, even now with so many eyes on it, like, if it's bad, like, that's you can't just sneak this one out there. You can't just put it out, and if people don't like it, it's like, oh well, we put it out there. Like, this is a thing.
I mean, it worked for Cloverfield. Yeah, that was bad, too,
and
it went,
like,
away.
There's people's reactions to things that they think are bad when they have to go to a theater, pay for it, and see it.
Yeah.
And then there's people's levels of acceptance when they sit at home and for free just click a thing that they find in front of them.
If the last Cloverfield movie had gone to the theater, it would have left with a very different taste in people's mouths, as opposed to it going to Netflix.
But
people are still looking forward to it.
I would say it works more on the Netflix side because Netflix has the reputation of being a direct-to-DVD, you know.
That's my whole point about the Hulu thing. Like, if you're trying to draw eyes to this,
but I don't think that's a thing Disney. But that's the thing. I don't think that's a hit Disney wants to take, especially when they've got stuff that they're just about to put out. Like, this is the PR side of my brain working. Like, they got a bunch of stuff that they're putting out that they think and want to believe is good. Why put something out there that is probably bad? Then everyone's going to be like, Disney has nothing. They're putting out crap.
But no one will say that.
You don't know that.
Why would they say that? There's no, I feel like you're jumping.
And this is Fox's
movie.
It's
a big jump. Yeah. All they have to do is say, look, we're just doing this because, you know what?
X-Men
fans want to see it.
You guys were loyal to Fox.
We got tons of cool stuff coming down the corner made.
Public, with that basically public undressing from Iger to Fox, like.
So why? I don't think anyone's going to point to Disney after this, bad or not, and go, well.
It's your fault.
Yeah. No one's doing that.
It's their fault for letting it go.
See, this is why PR is so screwed up.
It's their fault for letting it get released. If it's bad, if it's not good, no one wants to take that hit.
I don't think they'd be taking
it. Just leave it in the drawer. The
conversation
of whether this is going to be a hit has already gone out the window.
Yeah, it's not.
This is about what do you do with the corpse? Do you leave? Like, do you try to stuff the corpse in your back garden, or you just, like, put it out there and make a museum?
Because then you're always going to get asked about it. And if you just put it out there, it's done. Fox era, gone.
Listen to me. In the next 5 years, one way or another, I guarantee you, New Mutants is coming out somehow, some way. Like, you might as well just attract people to Hulu is all we're saying.
If they slip it in after they've put out their first wave of stuff and
that's
stuff
even
is
worse.
Like,
yeah,
no, I don't think
why
so.
Then?
I think just quietly put it out.
Clearly our rational brains do not understand public
why would you
relations.
Do that?
We're going to move on. But New Mutants looks like it's not looking good, so don't expect it. All right, moving on to Matt's territory. Aladdin was a $1 billion hit this year. Matt was the biggest cheerleader for it when everybody doubted. But now we're going to get a sequel, and we got to talk to, I believe, the producer.
Yeah,
Lynn,
Charlie Ridgeway.
And Charlie Ridgeway got to talk to him and came away with a little scoop about Aladdin 2. So, you know, because it's $1 billion, it's obviously going to probably be a sequel in the works. And what Dan Lin says is they are going to pull from various source material. I didn't know how much Aladdin source material was out there.
Oh, yeah, decent amount.
I don't know. I've never...
Movie-wise, there's three animated movies.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. We're not just doing The Return of Jafar, like the animated sequel, like most people would think.
King of Thieves.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Not King of Thieves.
King of Thieves.
Yeah, I was right. Yeah.
No, it was Return of Jafar.
It's Return of Jafar.
Return of Jafar.
First.
And then the third one is King of Thieves.
Yeah. But that's the one everyone likes. No one likes Jafar.
No. Nobody likes Jafar. People like King of Thieves a little more. Yeah.
I kind of liked Return of Jafar.
I liked both too. But here's the thing. So they're not going to just follow those animated movies. They're going to create an original story idea pulling from various source material. So it could be a little bit of King of Thieves, a little bit of Return of Jafar, a little bit of some written material and other stuff from like Aladdin stories. And so we're going to get something original. So how do you feel about that?
I mean, I'm totally good with that. I mean,
I think it's interesting because the first one was caught in the shadow of the animated one, Will Smith's Genie, blah, 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 like all that stuff. So now how do you feel about Aladdin stepping out into its own?
I mean, I think it's good. I think you'll still pull, I mean, they'll still probably pull a thing or two from Return of Jafar. I would imagine, and Charlie actually made this point, that, you know, where the movie ends is kind of one of the major premises of the third movie, which like brings in like Aladdin's dad and like you have this whole other subplot, and it's really cool. It's really interesting stuff there. So bring a little bit of that and then just do something fresh with it. I'm cool with that. I think now it's easy. You don't have to sell people on Genie. You don't have to sell people on here. And now, to me, the weakest part of the movie is Jafar. There's a perfect opportunity to move him aside.
The King of Thieves stuff would be much more interesting.
And if you want to still involve him, cool. But he's, to me, the weakest part of the first movie. So now you have a chance to, like, go a different path, add some stuff in him. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, King of Thieves, you could potentially do something that would make people look up and say, you know, this is the Gambit movie we're never getting. So take a little shot at Gambit. While we're just knocking down the old X-Men movie.
Fair enough.
All right, so that sounds pretty exciting. Connor, I know you have heavy thoughts on Aladdin, but we don't have time for them. I'm sorry.
Fair.
All right, moving right along. just kidding. But all right, so Marvel Television. Another big kind of hanging thread in this whole Disney-Fox merger and what's coming with Disney Plus is Marvel Television, okay? So we've been talking about this. BD was off here just, blah, 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 I won't watch it if it's not connected to the MCU. That's my imitation of Brandon Davis talking about this a couple episodes ago. Because we were talking about, Disney Plus is going to start airing these shows, Loki, WandaVision, Hawkeye, that are direct spinoff of Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, which made us ask, like, what the hell's up with Jeff Loeb and Marvel Television? Like, where does that fit now? Because Marvel Television has done stuff that's tangentially related to the MCU, like the Netflix Defenders stuff and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They've done stuff on Hulu that is really not related to the MCU at all. I mean, it is...
In the loosest
sense, like Runaways or Cloak and Dagger, which make reference to things that have happened in the MCU but are not in any way connected to those events. And then you have stuff that Marvel Television does that is in no way connected to that franchise, like The Gifted, Legion, those X-Men shows that have nothing to do with the MCU franchise whatsoever because of the Disney-Fox split. But Marvel Television was never kind of prohibited in the same way of playing with the sandbox in the same way that Marvel Studios was, because Marvel Television gets licensed to do all this stuff. Anyway, that's now all changed because Disney has collected all their toys again under the Fox banner. So the question has been, what is Marvel Television and how does it fit into this new thing, especially when Kevin Feige can now jump over to TV and do what he wants, you know, without having to get into those arguments with Jeff Loeb. So... In a recent interview, Jeff Loeb has kind of broken down some things that are very interesting and kind of have kind of painted an interesting roadmap for us. So the first thing is that we're going to be getting these. We knew that Marvel, Disney had also got a controlling stake in Hulu. And so we're going to continue building a Marvel universe over there. Runaways is still here. A Ghost Rider series is coming. Hellstrom series is coming. And now we have like an official title for these kind of this brand of the universe, which will be Adventures into Fear, which I kind of love. I know Jim hates.
I actually don't mind it. I think it's Jamie the one. Jamie's
Jamie
one
hates it. Yeah, Jamie Lovett is not a fan. I think it's Marvel a little 70s hokey stuff, right?
Yeah, I agree.
It's a little hokey.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it's Marvel 70s kind of fair. Like, it all was hokey. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Had stuff like Journey or 60s, 70s, Journey into Mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Adventures
in Tales of Suspense.
Yeah, Tales of Suspense, Adventures in Fear. that's basically, I mean, I prefer like Spirits of Vengeance or anything, but I guess right. they figured the 90s kids weren't strong enough to kind of go with that. But yeah, we're going to get two more series. I don't think they've said what the other two would be. We're still hoping for a Midnight or for a Moon Knight series.
Starting that campaign tomorrow.
Yeah.
starting that campaign tomorrow. I've been running that campaign.
Other people thought Blade could be headed to Hulu, but now that's off the table because Blade's getting his own movie and my MCU. But yeah, it's interesting because Adventures into Fear will be this other brand of the Marvel Universe that's kind of existing on Hulu with these kind of supernatural characters, which I'm very interested to see kind of take place. So that's, and it's hard to imagine, like, how do you build this thing and not have it connected to the MCU is kind of where we're at. Because what the other wrinkle in this is that Jeff Loeb also revealed that Marvel Television, that division. Now, this is the key to this. These are two separate divisions, Marvel Studios, Marvel Television. And they don't always get to play in the same realm. And as much as they try to do this, we're all connected. There's been internal beef where they are not connected.
Yeah.
I mean, but Jeff Loeb said it in an interview, hashtag, oh, it's all connected.
Yeah. And now, but now Marvel Television is also going to be developing programs for Disney Plus. So, like, this is the first time really that Marvel Studios and Marvel Television are really playing in the same platform space.
Yeah.
They've been separated. Marvel Television's on broadcast TV or streaming, like in this streaming service, and Marvel Studios sticks to just like the movies. Now it's all getting blended together, and now it seems like what Jim was suggesting in several shows about how Marvel Television would be reorganized is going to come, excuse me, to fruition, like it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They're going to reorganize it. The lingering question is, will they make it all connected? Will they officially say that, like, Runaways, Ghost Rider, or all these Adventures of Fear are in the MCU, or will it still be this kind of Netflix offshoot, tangential type thing? And what do you guys want to say?
It's a I'll believe it when I see it, because I rode so hard for the Netflix shows when they first started coming out, that those first two seasons of Daredevil, Jessica Jones, a lot of Luke Cage. I enjoyed all of it.
Well, fell and off I the was cliff after Luke Cage.
Pretty much the second half of Luke Cage is once Cottonmouth dies, whole thing goes downhill. I was strongly defending at the time, like, no, it's still connected. They mentioned the Avengers. They mentioned Hulk's attack on Harlem. They mentioned Captain America. Like, it all still works, even though none of it's really going to connect in terms of, like, Tony Stark's not flying into a
bullet,
scene.
Like, all that stuff. Like,
not going to happen. But as it went on, it became more and more clear that they don't care about the connection. And then when you get to the matters of what happened with Endgame, it's like, okay, they really don't care because they're not
Infinity
going to address
War
that
was nothing.
At all.
Yeah, I mean, it was really nothing for S.H.I.E.L.D. either. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s kind of completely
S.H.I.E.L.D. fallen. Deliberately went, hey, let's get the hell out of here so we don't get affected by this other stuff.
We're going into time and space, so we don't have to deal with Avengers Infinity War.
For me, it's all talk until they actually prove it.
Yeah, and not to mention, there's also this other Marvel TV show that's coming that we still don't know that might be like an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff. So, like, I mean, like, the question of what's going to happen here is kind of crazy because now it's becoming more convoluted. Like, what's up with the Disney Plus Marvel Television shows? Will they just play around and get to do anything? Like,
well, I think the idea for those is really to just truly continue the ongoing narrative of the MCU, where everything else is more like S.H.I.E.L.D. season one, season two, where it's reactionary to the events, but they're not actively pushing the MCU story forward. I think that's probably more of what we'll see. And then, you know, with an odd cameo here or there. But to me, the Marvel Studios produced shows for Disney Plus are to, like I said, to move that story along.
Yeah, but
where everything else kind of happens in the
periphery. We're reaching a level of consumer confusion that I think begins to get problematic right about there. Like, you're on the same service, Disney Plus. You can watch these shows, and they're directly connected to the movie, but you don't watch these shows because they're not. Like,
well, but the thing also, too, is you got to remember, like, Marvel Television is producing a show for Disney Plus. It's that Joe Quesada show where he's going around talking to creators in various industries. Like, that is a Marvel Television-produced show that is on Disney Plus. We don't know if we're going to get a insert character name here show produced, you know, or, you know, by Marvel Television on Disney Plus.
So you think that'll be the caveat that it's all like it culture
may,
stuff?
Yeah, it may end up being culture stuff, or like, you know, I know, the Marvel.com is every once in a while has done a bunch of, you know, what's that ESPN type
documentary? Sports Center?
No,
30 for 30,
like those like 30 for 30 type stuff. Then you may see more of that type stuff produced by Marvel Television that ends up there. And I think that may alleviate some of the consumer confusion, where everything else that's maybe character oriented will be either on broadcast on Hulu or somewhere else.
Just don't take the coward's way out and say it's all a multiverse thing, where, oh, it's all taking place in a different universe.
Well, I mean, they do have an entire show called What If, which is basically...
I mean, that's animated.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of sad. I mean, personally, I don't need everything to be connected, so it doesn't necessarily bother me, but I understand the confusion aspect, because I go in with the understanding of like, oh, it's not all whatever, like I'm in this,
yeah, steeped in this all day. Could make somebody like Brandon Davis's head explode,
like for a mainstream fan who comes in, it doesn't necessarily understand.
All he's got to do is go to Disney Plus to watch Marvel movies and related TV shows,
and then that is gonna muddy the waters a little bit depending on what they do. So I mean, I do understand that point, but for me it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so we're gonna have to wait and see, but this is gonna get really interesting as we sort through all these Disney Fox merger stuff as the MCU kind of evolves into phase 4. All right, that'll do it for our news flash. Make sure to stay tuned, because when we get back, we are going to review some TV shows, we are going to review some comics, and we're going to review how they did at wrestling this past weekend. So be sure to stay tuned.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, so let's do This Week in Comics. We're going to go through things. We're not going to get too crazy into like the Powers of 10 thing, because we've done some extensive reviews, but we are going to talk about it.
Yeah.
But first, the real headline here. We're getting a Yondu series.
Are you excited about that?
I mean, I was excited to see his ugly blue face like, popping up everywhere.
I know. Jim probably knows more about that than I do, because I haven't really steeped in the Yondu. Like, what is the Yondu series?
Oh, it literally is what it is. It's just story of Yondu. It's Yondu being Yondu.
Okay.
Doing, nothing, you know, space adventures.
Have they basically just stolen MCU run like Yondu and
stuck him? I mean, they've adopted his design.
Yeah, that's it. Because I feel like that's a lot of Guardians, because before that, like classic Yondu, nobody cared about for a series.
Oh no!
Oh yeah! Giant Finn absolutely thing. Not. Yeah.
And Finn Archer Yondu, nobody cared about.
Yes. And almost all Internet, of them now.
You know, galactic scumbag Yondu people love.
Yeah. Almost all of them now really do feel like the movie versions. Like, right, the Guardians more.
Yes. I feel like the Guardians are the most heavily influenced now.
Yeah. But it's got a great creative team with Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson, you know, writing, and John McCrae doing the art. And it's got a... it's got a great look.
I think it'll be exciting, like, just to have, like, the tale of, like, a cosmic scumbag walking around doing scumbag stuff would be great. Yeah.
I mean, it could be fun.
Like fun. It could be really light.
And I mean, while we're talking about scumbags, another thing that did get announced was a new Deadpool series, which I know some people will say yawn, but Kelly Thompson and Chris Bachalo are doing this, and I'm very excited for this.
I'm excited to hear. That's a good. That's a really good creative team. That's
like, that, right? Yeah. So it's just, oh my God, I'm so excited. I told Jamie I haven't been excited for a.
Chris Bacalo really, can be hit or miss depending on what he's married to. But this seems perfect.
Right? Yeah. Like when the last time I was excited, or I was actively reading, like not because it was part of my job, but like just reading for fun. Deadpool was Gail Simone. Deadpool. Like, that's been that long. So, like, I was like, oh, this team has me excited. I'm genuinely excited. But, yeah, there was a couple other announcements, too, from Marvel books that you can
check out on comicbook.com. Here, why don't you go through the other ones you just want to touch, and then we'll get into it.
There's a new Morbius series coming just in time for Morbius, I imagine.
Yeah, I don't know what that series is going to be.
get that first trade out. All it says is that the log line or the synopsis for the first issue is, Michael Morbius has been working to try and figure out a cure. The cure has probably made him more of a monster than he ever could have imagined. And
yeah,
away we go. So
it could either be really good or...
We're all waiting to see this whole Morbius
thing.
It all even sticks. So
I feel the same way about the comic as I do the movie. Same. Like, yeah.
They're all tied together.
But yeah, so, I mean, do you want to hit Powers of 10 first?
Well, no, we'll do that last. Okay. We'll just talk about that.
So, some other big books coming out this week.
Should we put a spoiler warning out there? Are you
going to
talk
spoiler? Yes, spoiler I'm going to get into some spoiler territory. Books. I'm going to try and avoid a ton until we get to Powers of 10. So, but still, spoiler warning, this is for today's books. So if you haven't read them yet, just pause here, go read them, and then come back. Listen to all our stuff. A new series starts, Once in Future, which looks like I've read the issue. The issue is fantastic. It kind of takes a fun twist on like Arthurian legends, you know, King Arthur, Excalibur, all that stuff.
King, yeah.
Really interesting way. And there's a character that like there's a grandma in this book that everyone will like adore halfway through the issue. She's amazing. She's like one of the main characters, and she's like this old spy, but like now she's like in her, she's in like an old folks home, and then she's like rolling up like a doobie in her room, and
sounds like Mallory Archer,
and threatening the other people. Like they try to turn the news, and she's like, "You could, but you know you're kind of old, so it'll take a really long time for your hands to heal." Like she's amazing. Like she's a great character. So that new series kicks off this week. Also, Go Power Rangers number 22. For those who have been interested in the Omega Rangers, the new Rangers that have come about in the last issue of Mighty Morphin, this goes into a lot of detail as to why and what their purpose is, and so fills in a lot of the blanks. So definitely pay attention to that. A book I am shouting out because it is a big book, Event Leviathan number 3, which is kind of DC's, would you call that an event book right now? It's kind of weird. It doesn't feel like an event book, but big thing.
It's affecting other books. Yeah. So technically it is an event
book. It's just the most low-key event book ever. Like just
prepping for Leviathan's debut in Supergirl this fall.
Basically.
It's not great. This is probably my least favorite issue. This is probably my least favorite issue so far, and especially like on the art side of things, which is kind of surprising. But
this is the roughest Alex Maleev.
Man, it's
we've seen it.
It's kind of rough, and there's still some good parts, but overall, I was kind of disappointed. But it is still a big book. Also, a book that do not read if you are having a bad day. Separation Anxiety number 1, which ties into Absolute Carnage.
This book is terrifying.
Well, okay, thank you. I came in, I was like, dude, I needed a cleanser.
This book has affected everybody. What is this?
I needed
about?
A cleanser. It's just like. I mean, I can go in the spoilers here, so...
It's like a premise. I want to know.
Imagine if it was the John Carpenter's The Thing, but in a house in the suburbs.
Oh, okay.
And it's told through the story of two young kids, and it's just like, man, it's rough. It's a little rough, yeah. And it's... Like, the art doesn't help, and by the end of it, it doesn't leave you in a happy place. Like, it's just kind of a downer. It's good, but it's kind of a downer. So, anyway, I needed to watch something fun on YouTube after
they do some. They do some crazy stuff with body horror with the symbiotes and that.
It's kind of crazy. So, good, though, but memorable in the wrong ways. Cap Marvel number 9 definitely reveals some things about... I mean, they've done a lot of things about revealing her, like, Kree heritage and... kind of playing on some topical issues here as well about like acceptance in American society. It's really good too.
There's some good reveals. You love Captain Marvel.
Here's the thing. See, I only mentioned it once. Fantastic Four number 13 actually has a great matchup between the Hulk and the Thing. And I think if you have been a fan of the Thing for a long time and always feel like he gets second billing to Hulk, you'll really like this issue. It's, I mean, yes, there's been an ongoing storyline, but you can really come into this kind of and just read this for what it is. I think Thing fans will really like this. And then last but not least, a book I did not expect to like was Punisher Kill Crew, number one. That spins out of War of the Realms.
Oh, I thought it was about killing Drew. That's what you have written.
No. Kill Crew.
Kill Crew. What did Drew do?
Must kill Drew.
I'm not the biggest Punisher fan. But this was like, this actually grabbed me by issues in. I was like, all right, I'll stick around on this series because it does put him in territory that I think is interesting for his very hardcore tunnel vision type of character. It puts him into a guardian role. And I think that's interesting. I think when Frank Castle's put into those roles, that's good areas for character work. So, really interesting. And you, if you read War of the Realms, it would be better, but you don't have to enjoy this issue. So I very much think it's great. And now, Powers of 10.
Okay, let's talk about Powers of 10. So we've been doing Jonathan Hickman's X-Men reinvention every week, and every issue, just when we think we got a handle on this thing, like a new issue comes out, it's House of X, then Powers of 10, then House of X, then Powers of 10, and we've gone through two cycles of that now. But every time we get a new issue, it's just like, what the what? And we have to kind of realign our perceptions all over again. Now I got to go back and read House of X 2 all over again, and 1 probably, and Powers of 10 1. But yeah, so we're going to talk major spoilers for this issue. Like, we're going to break it down. So if you have not read Powers of 10 number 2, stop listening now. All right. So after last week, we found out in House of X number 2 that Moira McTaggart is an Omega-level mutant who basically has Groundhog Day power. She dies and restarts, but instead of like resetting, reliving the same day, she relives the same lifetime. Mm-hmm. So she dies and then relives a lifetime. She's done this 10 times, and the current Marvel Universe that we know is her 10th lifetime. And in that 10th lifetime, it's teased that she went back to her first meeting with Charles Xavier and basically showed him the truth of who she is, because her mutant power only activates when she dies. It's not really detectable during her lifetime. Mm-hmm. So she opened her mind to him, and she can kind of hide this and showed him the truth about everything about her, which blew Xavier's mind and started him on some plan that relates to these various futures that we have laid out for us in House of 10 or Powers of 10, the beginning of the X-Men, the current timeline, the future timeline of the man-machine supremacy war, and then this further 1,000 years later where this.
It's 1/10
blue. Yeah. 1/10, 100, and 1,000. Yeah, powers of 10. So, in the 1,000, in the future, where there's this advanced society after the man-machine supremacy war, and there's this blue alien mutant thingy who's, you know, this whole society, and what that's all about.
Who's working with Nimrod.
Yeah, with Nimrod now, because all of this old conflict is obsolete now, and now there's something else they're working on, which is they keep mentioning Ascension.
Yeah.
So, we got to find out in this issue several things. And this is probably the most piecemeal issue of the entire series so far, because it's spread out over, it just does key scenes for certain things. We learn more about what happened when Moira showed Charles Xavier the truth and how Charles went and recruited Magneto to this. And we basically learn that throughout what is ostensibly all of the X-Men history we know, Charles and Xavier and Magneto have secretly known that they're working on this larger plan to, you know, not just make mutant, to basically help mutant kind inherit their place in the world.
Yeah.
And that everything they've done since then has, no matter what we've seen, has been under the umbrella of knowing Moira McTaggart's, like, master plan. So that's a big thing. That was the first thing. We learn more about the man-machine supremacy future and the surviving X-Men on Asteroid K, Krakoa. We learn the big tree guy the big flamehead guy definitely is Zorn. The big tree guy is definitely not Black Tom Cassidy. Yeah. It is the Krakoa entity that has somehow taken over Cypher's body.
Well, it makes sense given what you saw in House of X number one and Cypher doing all of the the work on Krakoa and, you know, adapting it and all that jazz. So I actually really think that's a cool way to, like, give Krakoa legs, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally give it legs. So, the Krakoa entity is now one of the surviving members of the X-Men, which makes a lot of sense, more so than Black Tom, I guess. So we learned more about that future, and what they stole was... And I love Hickman, because in the issue of Powers of 10, the X-Men in the future had this big battle. They steal this thing from the man, from, like, the lesser Nimrod Citadel or whatever it is. And they never tell you after all this action what they actually stole.
Yeah.
This issue goes into deep into that, into what they stole. And it just tells you at the end that what they stole is a thing that helps them find the actual thing. Like, without telling you anything. So we got that. And then, craziest of all, in the end, this future of the Ascension, we find out that this mutant blue thing and this Nimrod drone have basically built this entire, like, Advanced Future Society to audition for the Phalanx who come down and they're like, what do you, you know, what do you want to do here, bro? And he, and the mutant thing is like, Ascension. Yeah. And so the Phalanx are going to absorb this society and we don't know what's going to happen there, but, you know, they're just going to maybe become part of the Phalanx or, so, and then,
because we still don't know if there are X-Men
in that future. Yeah. No. I mean, so far we know all of that old stuff is gone and become, and it's now like beneath them, they're like above all that conflict. Mm-hmm. And that's what they talk about, the mutant and the Nimrod, like how stupid it all was.
Yeah.
Like, there's a mutant database that Nimrod made from, like, you know, preserving people and doing all that. Humanity was trying to advance, AI was trying to advance, and it was all so stupid in the future. So now this is the real Ascension, apparently, and I don't know what the hell this means. And then we get a chart, if that wasn't enough, we get a chart at the end that basically lays out Hickman's steps for you know, almost like the evolution of machines and AI from, like, a single AI, like, mind to a hive mind of collected AI to, like, a technarchy. The technarchy gets brought back up again, which was what Warlock came from. Mm-hmm. World mind gets brought up, like an entire planet of living mind. And then the Phalanx, which is the top of the chain, which is this entire galaxy of, you know, shared things.
Yeah, and they...
So basically, we come away from Powers of 10 a little more confused than we've ever been. And I just threw up my hands and I said, I feel like at this point, Hickman's just literally got a grocery list of everything that was ever in the X-Men mythos for by decade.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, we're going to change this. We're going to change that. We're going to change this because it's just everybody's getting involved in this. Like from Krakoa to Magneto to Mr. Sinister to Apocalypse. Now the Phalanx. Oh, I forgot. I just forgot. Apocalypse makes a surprise appearance in here.
He's one of the last.
He's the leader
remaining
of the future X-Men. Yeah. Like in the Man-Machine Supremacy War. They're fighting with Apocalypse. So
there's a moment in that issue that I loved the seeing the sort of two side by side where it's, you know, Apocalypse talking to two of his acolytes or whatever, and you know, talking about how they're important to him and whatnot. And then on the flip side, you've got Nimrod and his two, and he just burns.
He's just like, "Are you tired? No, I don't believe you." Bang.
I told Jim this that like Nimrod is low-key my favorite character in this story.
That's what I said, and I still want to know so like why this particular Nimrod the Lesser has this like unique personality and like what that's all about, because there's a story there and I want to know like what that story is.
So good.
Yeah, but he is such a great thing, and then like he's like, oh, regretful, and then he's still talking to their smoldering corpses.
And then, but then also too, then there's also this other giant idea with the mother mold.
Yeah, that
like,
thing
that's
keeps
just
popping
like
up every
floating
so
up
often
in space that we're just getting little bits of here and there. And it's the layering in this series is a lot of fun and frustrating at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like a good kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I was going to say it's one of those things that I've missed in, I mean, I've not stopped reading comics, but these pockets are rare. These pockets of when you find something like this and every week or every 2 weeks it's something to really chew on.
Yeah, I mean,
it's really interesting.
He's bringing back, like, and I said this on Twitter, like, no matter how you feel about House of X and Powers of X as an event series, like, I mean, Jonathan Hickman is successful in making the X-Men an event.
Yeah.
Like, every week. Like, the amount of media attention this is getting, and, you know, thanks to people like us, but, like, the amount of media attention this is getting, the way the fan base is buzzing and discussing and doing this. Like, I can go into House of X, Powers of 10 chat threads, and I haven't done stuff like that for comics in how many years. Like, yeah. And it's just, like, giving us a whole bunch of something to talk about. Now we just got to land this plane. We're coming up on the halfway point.
Yeah.
That's going to be the next 2 weeks is the halfway
point. Which
is
so crazy to think. It's like, oh, it's this Powers of 10 number 2, but we're, like, a quarter of the way through this series, and I'm just like,
how are you going to wrap? Yeah, I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, but I feel like we're running out by issue 3. Like, the stage setting is going to be done because things are starting to definitely... I mean, this was an issue of reveals. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it was. It was just, Yay, reveal. Magneto's known the whole time. Reveal. Apocalypse is leading the X-Men. Reveal. The Phalanx are in this.
Yeah.
Like, and all this is going to be kind of, now we're going to have to start to really pull it together and see how the effect. And I'm just really interested to see how Powers of 10 actually, in its shifting timelines, are actually going to get pulled together with House of X's kind of more present storyline.
But also, like, how this whole thing fits into the grander Marvel Universe, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
that's a big plane to land, so.
Agreed.
All right, but I'm still in like Flynn, and yeah, I mean, as somebody who loved the Phalanx Covenant event, like, back in the 90s, I mean, this has been great for me, a 90s kid, because there's so much that it's touched on that, like, already I'm seeing shades of that I'm reminded of, and, like, yeah, so I'm enjoying it. All right, I cut something. You'll never know what I cut, so we're going to go right to talking about wrestling. So, Matt, Connor, you guys had some... I think Connor was a skeptic on SummerSlam this year.
Kofi, I love being wrong. I have to say it. I love
being wrong. I just want to say, I thought this card was going to be dope.
You did.
You
did.
You were right.
And it was tight. So,
SummerSlams are
tight. Tell us about SummerSlam. Connor, make us all... Tell us why you were surprised.
So, I was wonderfully wrong with this. This show went a tight 3.5 hours. It had a lot of good stuff in it. The matches that I was dreading performed the best, particularly the main event, which blew my expectations out of the water.
Those two, I feel, are going to be something when we look back on, like, epic pairings and epic matches. Those two have always, even during the squash matches, have always had.
Who are the two you're talking about?
Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins, for the title. Seth Rollins comes out on top. But those two have fantastic chemistry.
Yeah,
and that's the most we've seen Brock work in a very long time. And it just shows that he can still go when he wants to.
Going all the way back to their triple threat with Cena at Royal Rumble 14, I believe. Like, they've had incredible chemistry. And it brings up a point about Brock in that we kind of lament every time he gets the world title again, because it means, hey, we're not going to see the world championship on television every week for months at a time. We might not see this guy wrestle for another 4 months from now. That kind of sucks, because it leaves the shows to kind of spin their wheels until he gets back. But this just showed that when he wants to and when the situation calls for it, Duke can put on incredible matches, even if they're only 10 minutes.
I also think they did just a much better job between the time he got the belt and between this of keeping him present, even if he wasn't there. I mean, Heyman's promos, the whole will he or won't he, the cash-in, like, all that stuff was handled actually pretty well, and it kept his name in there. You were always thinking maybe he'll show up. Mm-hmm. They did a much better job of that this time than they did last time.
Exactly.
Because he was gone, and I feel like it's justified for people to go, great, he's going to be, because that's what happened last time.
But that all being said, I hope they do move into a new direction with Rollins now with the Universal Championship. Other stuff that really impressed me, Trish Stratus.
Dude, that
had the longest match of the night.
She looked great for not having a full match like that since 2006.
Yeah.
That was great. She was pulling off moves with grace. Like, she was hitting, like, a lot of her stuff, and there wasn't, like, it wasn't botched city. Like, it was a lot. It was good. She did good. And Charlotte, perfect opponent for her.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then Goldberg.
I got my 6 minutes.
The match was two.
It all counts.
The match was
he
two.
He came back out. He did it again. He went back. He came back.
He got more of a workout walking back and forth up and down that ramp.
And here's the thing.
Than he did.
The first time, he looked spent. When he went down there, I was like, dude, he is huffing. Like, that's bad.
But, man, that first moment where Ziggler breaks the super kick out, you're like, what just happened?
Yep.
And then kudos to Ziggler, because I laughed so hard. He's rolling around on the mat. And he's got the mic, and he's just like, I'll never. And he never gets up. He never gets back up. It was super. I didn't think that's the way I would get my 6 minutes, but I did. And I loved it, and I got 3 spears out of it. I'm fine.
The meme of him as the Black Knight from Monty Python is the best.
It's so good.
And if that's his gimmick from now on, I'm good with that.
I do have to say, I did not enjoy that crowd. I thought that crowd was kind of crap throughout the whole thing.
Super lame.
It was flat at weird times.
Yeah, because there were some great matches that they didn't react at all to, and then they would pop for the cheap crap. And I'm like, I get it. Every guy's from Canada. Court him out, and you're gonna get a pop. Come on, have some, like, have some layers, have some depth there. Because Bailey and Ember, that was a great match. You would have heard a pin drop, like, out there. And I'm like, that was a great match. It should have had more.
That wasn't okay.
It was good. It was.
I'll tell you what, though, I enjoyed the Ricochet AJ Styles match.
There you go. That ending was awesome.
I thought the crowd wasn't as up in that one either, I thought. Yeah. So, yeah, there was a couple of great matches there.
Glad they're letting the OC keep rolling with all those titles.
And please, dear Lord, don't let WWE screw up Bray Wyatt and The Fiend.
That was my biggest disappointment of the night.
Are you serious?
No, not Fiend's entrance. That was, yes, that
the
was great.
You didn't like the match?
No. It was crap.
You knew it was short and crap.
I said on Fiend got here. Squashed. I said on here, what did I say? It's actually on tape. You can go listen to it. I said I didn't want a pure thing because I thought they can get a lot out of this in the future. If they do it right, you build him as an unstoppable beast, and then you bring Finn back 2 months, 3 months later, whatever, and you have yourself a great match. Instead, they don't do that. It's like, there's not future-proofing. This is just, we'll do a real quick squash because that's easy.
Yeah.
And it's just boring.
Because I imagine they've got different plans for Finn. I imagine.
You know what? You saw what they teased at the start of the show. The OC walks in and goes, all you got to do is say when.
I know that. That's
give
fine.
Give us what we want.
Okay. I don't think everybody wants that.
A lot of people want that.
A lot of people do, but I think a lot of people would also sign up for a Bray Demon feud as well.
We got that already.
That as a crap Bray Wyatt, not committed to that character.
That was Bray Wyatt with magic powers.
Yeah.
Lame. That was the lamest
that was
version
Bray Wyatt
of him.
With magic powers.
Are you
Bray
talking
Wyatt.
About the stupid holograms in the ring and crap? No.
That's
that
called
was
magic.
Awful. That was terrible.
Against Pumpkin Demon.
That was terrible.
I know, but that's why I feel like they need way more space. I think. Because here's the thing.
You're getting space.
No, because here's the thing. Demon Finn is weak right now. They have not built Demon Finn.
I know that he's about to go away for months.
But it's the thing, but like, you still need stronger Demon Finn matches to happen for you to believe that Demon Finn actually has a shot.
You're right. Maybe. And then he stops midway and does that weird, I don't know what I'm doing. Am I committing or not? He holds his head.
No, because he's doing the thing where it's, do I hurt him or heal him?
Okay.
And that's the thing that we've hinted at in all the
I don't
one
think,
house.
One, I thought that was bad too, because I don't think they should. I thought they did made such an iconic like impact with the lantern. Bray's dead.
Dude.
That stuff's holdovers. No, don't do
well,
that.
No, but
start
I think,
with
but I
the
think
new
that, but
thing.
I don't think that's... I think the old Bray Wyatt is dead. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. That, the
but
old
that
Bray Wyatt
heel
is
or
but
whatever...
the Yowie Wowie Bray Wyatt, still very much alive.
This whole thing...
Firefly Funhouse Bray, still alive.
And Twitter agrees with me, by the way, because after that, people went, why are you messing with that? Just make him... They wanted... Like, the audience wanted him to get smashed and make Bray look like an unstoppable force. Yeah. They didn't want him to stop midway and be confused. No one wants a confused Fiend who needs to go to like therapy. No one wants that. Just give us Fiend.
I think you'll still get that. I think him using the mandible claw though, because that means you can put him up against like Braun Strowman type big dudes and still have him take him down.
Yeah, and it feeds into the whole horror movie aesthetic. I mean, like we said before, this is a Jason Voorhees type finisher.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. Beyond the Bray and Finn stuff with the future, we'll get the Fiend versus the Demon at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe. What matches excite you going forward? Because we've got Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch already teased.
I mean, that one.
We've got King of the Ring coming up starting
you already,
next week.
You already answered the questions, that one.
King of the Ring next week. Jim, I know you're excited for that.
Yep.
We're getting Kofi Orton continued.
Ugh.
Woo! We already know that. I was pissed.
That was
with the non.
I was so disappointed by that, and so was the crowd.
It was a pretty good match, too.
It was,
but that finish was terrible.
Yep,
that finish was so bad.
Like,
was,
the crowd reflected it. It's like, give us a finish.
It landed with a thud. I mean, they booed. I mean, some people were booing that, and I'm like, that's terrible. I'm not excited for the Orton Kofi. I think some of the king.
Always excited for Kofi.
I think the king of the. I love Kofi. I just don't want him against Randy Orton. Put him against almost anybody else. I'll take him against Heath Slater. Just don't put him against Randy Orton. The King of the Ring, we were kind of talking about earlier, like, that is interesting. The SmackDown side looks a little weak.
I mean, it's weird because there are people that are on both of those lists that clearly are not going to win.
Yes.
And that's what I think takes a little bit of the juice out of it. Like, it's just list fodder where I feel like you could have swapped people out
and made it more
who had a better chance, because it, you know, when you look at it, I mean, it's like the Miz, you know, the Miz is a clear standout. Samoa Joe,
Andrade, Corbin, unfortunately.
But on the SmackDown side, you've got, I don't even remember who I thought were the front runners on this.
You were upset about Shelton Benjamin.
I love Shelton Benjamin, but like, come on. You know, you put him on there, you're like, that dude's not going to win.
So there's a few ways they can go with that. If they go the route of like the early 2000s with, hey, if you win it, you also get a title shot.
It's like a Money in the Bank
down title. The road. Brock Lesnar kind of got inserted in the title picture that way. Or you do what they did with William Regal in 08, where you act instead of just, oh, I got a crown and staff and everything, it's, oh, I've actually changed up my character and can.
Like, I don't want another best in the world scenario here. I don't want another Shane McMahon for 6 months, because that is nothing, right?
But I feel like Andrade could do something a lot.
Well, to wrap this all to a close, now that you've gotten the events of SummerSlam and or Raw, what do you guys want to see next?
Roman Reigns versus Daniel Bryan. I actually like what they're doing with the story, as goofy as it was at the start.
God, with that stupid shelf falling on him. Oh, wait. Let me stand here for 10 minutes
Here's
while it falls on me.
Here's this giant gap on the floor that I clearly fit under.
So bad. But yeah, no, I'm Becky, Sasha all the way. Loved Sasha's comeback. I think that was great.
Ooh, that was a slap heard around the world.
They knocked that out of the park, and I'm good for that feud for a while.
Snatching wigs, blue hair, don't care.
Booyah.
Ooh.
That's me.
That's us, Cope. Connor, is that it?
It's Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Easy way to go.
All right. Well, I want to see more like wig ripoffs and slaps. That's basically what I want out of this whole thing. So that does it. All right. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Thank you guys for listening. If you are just getting acclimated with our show, we post new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com. You can subscribe and name one of those articles to our RSS feed to get regular updates about new episodes of the show. Or you can subscribe on your favorite listening platform. We are on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and Google Playlists. Or you can tell any Amazon Alexa device to play Comic Book Nation podcast, and it should fire up the latest episode for you. If you want to continue the conversation about anything we've been talking about, you can always hit us up on the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can reach me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can reach me at Matt Aguilar CB.
At Connor Casey _CB.
And if you like the show, be sure to go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. Every other show or so, we read some reviews that you guys have left us, and there have been some great ones lately. And if we read your 5-star review on the air, we will send you some Comic Book Nation swag in the form of an awesome t-shirt. So be sure to leave those reviews. That'll do it for us. We hope to catch you guys next time. This is Comic Book Nation. We're out.
Deuces.
Peace.